This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's the seasons for graduation and commencements, and though Talk of the Nation has not been invited to give a commencement address this year, we're going to give one anyway. First, though, of course, we're going to have to write this speech, and we're going to need your help. On Thursday, we want you to call in or email us with suggestions for our 2003 commencement address. You can start with the emails now if you'd like. A clever line, a profound thought, or some timeless advice to the graduates of 2003. That's Thursday on Talk of the Nation, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Right now, we're turning our attention and the conversation to the end of a television phenomenon. Tonight, it's the last stand for the girl who kept monsters at bay with quick wits, karate kicks, and impeccable taste in clothes. In this excerpt, Buffy the Vampire Slayer discusses the burden of her calling with her sometime rival and ally, Faith.
I guess everyone's alone. But being a slayer, there's a burden we can't share.
And no one else can feel it. Thank God we're hot chicks with superpowers.
Takes the edge off.
Just comforting.
For 7 years, Buffy battled assorted bloodsuckers, monsters, and demons set in a sleepy Southern California town conveniently located on the mouth of hell. The show pitted the barely constrained forces of darkness against one slightly flaky, frequently stressed-out teenager, backed up, of course, by a loyal band of friends. The show combined camp horror with real fears, pop culture with snappy dialogue, and feminist girl power with one really powerful girl. The last episode airs tonight. If you're a diehard fan or terminally confused, give us a call to discuss the meaning of it all. Has Buffy transcended the media mundane, or is this an awful lot of fuss over a teen cult? Our phone number, again, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is David Lavery, a co-author of Slayage, the online international journal of Buffy studies. He's also co-editor of a collection of essays titled Fighting the Forces, What's at Stake in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's with us from his home in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here.
Can you give us a thumbnail version of the show as it stands right now before Buffy goes off to battle to save the world again tonight?
Yeah, somebody once joked on, one of the characters once joked on Buffy that they had to learn the plural of apocalypse. another apocalypse awaits tonight, the first, which is short for the first evil, the evil that originated all the other evils that Buffy has fought, is basically rallying an army and getting ready to take over the world, starting with Sunnydale. Tonight.
Always starts with Sunnydale, doesn't it?
It always does. Why anyone lives there, I don't know. And as a matter of fact, over the last few weeks, they've all moved out.
And with good reason. The property values are just going way, way down.
That's for sure.
David, you're a professor of English, and you're going to be teaching a course on Buffy next year. What about this program could take up a whole semester?
Well, I should mention I'm not the first, that there's many courses being taught, particularly not just here but overseas, because Buffy's an international phenomenon. It's a show that interests an English professor like myself in all the same kinds of things that great literature does. It's rich in metaphor. Witness the fact that there is a 320-page Oxford University Press book coming out this summer recording Buffy's language, the language used in the show. It is ripe with metaphor. It is filled to overflowing with interesting characters and interesting characterizations. It's just a masterpiece of narrative. When you consider this is the 144th episode tonight, that makes it roughly the equivalent of 50 feature films.
Let's get our listeners involved. Marie joins us from Virginia Beach.
Oh, hi. I'd love to just thank anybody involved with the show, because I only discovered this about 6 months ago, and I started out terminally confused, and now I am an absolute fan. And I think it is just remarkable that you can have something that is allegedly a youth series, and here I am, a 54-year-old escaped Latin teacher, and I find it just one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen. You have to know at least from Shakespeare through Disney to get half the jokes. It is laugh out loud funny more times than you would ever imagine, and just so fabulously directed and acted. It's amazing.
Well, Marie may want to sign up for a David Lavery's course.
Well, it's going to be offered online, so she could.
Okay.
I'm not online, but otherwise I would.
Well, it's interesting because she said she was a Latin teacher, and it has gotten a great deal of interest from classics professors. For example, I heard an excellent talk last year at the Buffy conference in England on the use of the classics in it, and that professor, as a matter of fact, very carefully examined the poem in Greek that Willow writes with calligraphy on her lesbian lover Tara's back in Restless in a fourth season episode, and we found out that within one half of a character stroke it was exactly the original poem by Sappho.
Well, joining us now is Elise Ray Helford, a director of the Women's Studies Program and a professor of English at Middle Tennessee State University, and good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you.
You're director of Women's Studies at Middle Tennessee State. What is your take on the feminist angle of Buffy, of the girl power aspect? Is she a good role model?
I think Buffy perfectly fits the girl power moment of the turn of the millennium, because she is everything you need to be an empowered woman, and I'll put empowered in quotation marks there, because she's white, she's middle class, and she's beautiful, put quotation marks around that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so she can be empowered, and she can be tough, yet she doesn't have the kind of cultural power that would make real girls in the real world strong, political, economic, those kinds of powers. So I think she's perfect in that way. Just like girl power in general, I think it gives and it takes away. You have to fight in heels, and you have to have makeup on all the time. And if you get angry, you can't get too angry. So I enjoy Buffy for that tension in it. But would I say it's feminist? I don't know. I don't think I'd say any television can be, by its commercial nature, truly feminist.
Well, you've written an essay about Buffy and talked about female anger. What was your theory?
I think that Buffy, again, fits real well into current theories about girls' anger, adolescent girls and anger, that adolescent girls do get angry, that particularly white middle-class girls are discouraged from being angry, and they tend to show it through, like Buffy does, through pouting, through sarcasm, through indirection, rather than overt, direct expressions of anger at being disempowered, anger at having other things control their lives, whether it's the metaphoric monsters that may represent certain kinds of social oppression or psychological fears and anxieties, or just not being able to have a good date on a given day where she's got to fight the powers of evil rather than going to prom or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get another caller, let's see if I can... I've messed up the phones again. Let's go to Andrew, who joins us from Lakewood, Ohio.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for having me on.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I think it's interesting. I think Buffy is really, throughout the years, I think we've always had that pop icon for young women to latch onto and use as a role model. I think we had, starting in the 1940s, we had Wonder Woman, who, like Buffy, had a lot of basis in her classic myths. She was strongly rooted in the Greek myth, and then she carried through many decades. And then I was just sitting here thinking back, and of course I smiled when your other caller mentioned that Wonder Woman 2 had to fight in heels and a tiara,
right?
I guess we haven't lost that yet, but then moving into the 80s, the children of the 80s, like myself, we had She-Ra, who was He-Man's, female counterpart. The girls could latch onto that as a role model. And I think Buffy is really a triumphant figure for no other reason than just that she gets young people interested in some of the, some of the myths, some of the legends that are out there. Not necessarily they have to be interested in the dark side of everything, but I think she is a very empowering character.
Mm-hmm.
Elise,
I guess the immediate predecessor would have been Xena, the warrior woman.
Yeah, I like Xena in part because Lucy Lotz, who plays her, is a big woman. She's not extra large, but you just see so much petiteness in the Hollywood media, and I do enjoy the fact that Xena was a little bit bigger. Obviously, it's very intentional that Buffy is small, because the idea is that she's the little unassuming cheerleader that then turns out to be the superhero. And there's something entertaining in that, but I ask you to think for a moment about having that with a male character. You just will never see it.
Okay.
Think about X-Men.
Well, Spider-Man maybe. I don't know.
Well, he's a little wimpy, but he's not tiny.
Okay. Andrew, cool. Thanks very much for the call. We want to move on.
Okay.
Thanks. And Elisa, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Elise Ray Helford, thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure to talk with you, Neil.
She is director of the Women's Studies Program and a professor of English at Middle Tennessee State University, and she's with us from her home also in Murfreesboro. We get a lot of Murfreesboro today. We're still on the line with David Lavery, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And David, let's get another caller. Joey joins us on the line from Tucson.
Good afternoon, y'all. Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to say what a joy it was to discover a show that was so apt at blurring genre boundaries. I mean, I really didn't like the movie, to tell you the truth, and when I heard this discussed on a national radio show, I thought I'd give it a chance, and just it had me from the first episode because it was able to effortlessly blend the comedy, the drama, you know, the teen angst, with the horror of the science fiction, and do it all with a tongue buried so deep in cheek that, you know, you couldn't help but laugh at every episode, even the darkest ones. Even in the middle of the darkest season, they pulled off a masterstroke by putting out Once More with Feeling, the Buffy musical, which just blew me away.
David Lavery, there are an awful lot of people who will note that this began with a movie that the TV show greatly improved upon.
Yes, I can't think of very many instances of anything like that. I mean, a failed movie becoming a great television show.
Well, I thought it was a decent movie.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, Joss Whedon doesn't, and he wrote, you know, he did write the original movie, but it's kind of fun. I went to see it immediately because I loved the idea of it. It was grossly disappointed, except for Pee Wee Herman's part.
Yeah, the Paul Reubens death scene was fabulous.
It was wonderful. But the movie lost the horror. That was the problem. The director, Fran Rebel-Kazooie, had basically went for the high camp and lost the horror. And your previous caller just had it exactly on the money. It has managed in its genius to mix genres so beautifully, or maybe the word isn't mix, but bust genre wide open. That's been its true genius, its ability to go back and forth. And if it leaves a lasting legacy for television, I think it will be in that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll convince television creators and producers that we don't have to stick quite so strictly to one genre or another.
Let's see, one more time there. It works. Stacy, you're on with us from Kansas City.
Hi, hello.
Hello.
I'm so glad to be able to talk about this show. I'm 31 years old and have been watching the show for the past 7 years. And like many people said before, I've done everything from laugh to cry and have been scared in the middle of the midday watching my tapes. But the thing I wanted to say was it kind of ties into the earlier part of the show. One thing I appreciated most about this show was that for Buffy, they always showed that sex had a consequence.
Right.
For example, when Buffy and Angel finally got around to doing it, he lost his soul. And even in the years when she was a freshman in college, I really appreciated the fact that it wasn't unlike some other shows on the WB at that time, where people just sort of hopped in and out of bed. There was a maturity about the discussion of her relationship with the men in her life that showed that there really were consequences to some of her actions, and even somewhat with Willow and Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent point.
Well, thank you very much for the contribution, Stacy. We appreciate
You're
it.
Welcome.
And finally, do you have any idea? I mean, you know, I guess whatever happens to Buffy tonight, David Lavery, she's going to enjoy a certain kind of immortality in TV reruns and syndication forever and ever. But, you know, is the Hellmouth going to what could possibly happen?
Well, I've seen it, so I know what happens, but I won't ruin it for your listeners, except to say that they will love it.
They will love it. All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
I'm happy to have been here.
David Lavery is the co-editor of Slayage, the online international journal of Buffy Studies. He's also co-editor of a collection of essays titled Fighting the Forces, What's at Stake in Buffy the Vampire Slayer? And he was with us on the phone from his home in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.